Judge John Roberts is speaking at the White House after being introduced by President Bush. He currently sits on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia. He has been chosen by the president to succeed Sandra Day O'Connor as an Associate Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States. We'll be hearing some reaction from Democrats on Capitol Hill shortly, from Democrats on the committee that will consider the nomination. Here in the studio now, David Green, NPR White House correspondent, and NPR Legal Affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg. David, one last point about process, about what the White House is saying. Why today? Why now did they come up with the nomination? Do they give a timetable?
Well, it was a little unexpected. At first, when this process started, the White House was signaling it may take a while. It may really string this out. So a confirmation battle didn't dominate the whole summer leading up to when a confirmation might finally take place. In recent days, it seemed they were trying to accelerate the process. Why that was, we don't know. The White House said today that it was just the Senate clock was running out. They had to get a name there before the Senate recess next week. But it certainly seemed like this news is now dominating at a time when, in the last few days, the news for the White House wasn't that good. It was Karl Rove. It was questions about who leaked the name of a CIA operative. So they've whether that it was their intention or not, they've certainly gotten that news off the headlines.
Nina, the news is Judge Roberts. He's not news to you. This is a
Actually,
judicial heavyweight here.
Yeah, Robert, you know, he's probably not news to careful listeners of ours because he has argued so many cases in the Supreme Court, and he's always been very generous with his time before he went on the bench, and he would always come over here and do interviews with me about the clients that he was representing and the issues that he was representing. And I remember we heard from David about how Judge Roberts and the president got along famously, and
I'm going to have to interrupt because we're going to hear right now from Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont,
who's his choice.
Ranking Democrat on judiciary.
Now the Senate has to rise to the challenge and do its work. To fulfill our constitutional duties, we need to consider this nomination as thoroughly and carefully as the American people deserve. It's going to take time and the cooperation of the nominee and the administration. After all, a member of the Supreme Court is there for all people in this country, no matter what their party. And that means that Republicans as well as Democrats have to take seriously our constitutional obligations on behalf of all Americans. We have to ensure the Supreme Court remains a protector of all Americans' rights and liberties from government intrusion, and that the Supreme Court understands the role of Congress in passing legislation to protect ordinary Americans from special interest abuses. No one is entitled to a free pass to a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court. Someone confirmed today can be expected to serve on the court until the year 2030 or later. How the nominee views precedent, what he regards as settled law, how he will exercise the incredible power of a Supreme Court justice to be the final arbiter of our rights and the meaning of the Constitution, all of these raise very different considerations than in the lower court. Now, Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, whom I voted for the Supreme Court, is a model of justice. She brought a fair and open mind to the bench. She decided cases without a political agenda. Widely respected as jurists of common sense and practical values. She didn't prejudge cases. And I regret that the extreme right has been so critical of her and was so adamantly opposed to her successor sharing her judicial philosophy. Now, the Constitution calls on us in the Senate to examine nominations of the court, not to rubber stamp them. I look forward to hearings that are going to inform the Senate and all Americans. I'll work with Chairman Spector to have a fair hearing. It's going to take a fair amount of time to do that, but we will do it. But there will be thorough hearings, and I really do not expect any issues that go to the qualifications, the honesty, the integrity, and the fairness of a Supreme Court justice to be off limits. All those questions can be asked. Chuck Schumer is the Democrat who represents us on the subcommittee.
Well, we've heard from Senator Patrick Leahy, who is the senior Democrat on judiciary. His opposite number, Republican counterpart, is Arlen Specter, who's the chairman. The Republicans are in the majority. And Nina Totenberg, from what we've heard in the past from Senator Specter, when we just heard from Senator Leahy, what do you expect in the way of confirmation hearings?
Well, look, Judge Roberts is a man who has a lot of friends in Washington, including Democratic friends. In the last half hour, I've already talked to a couple of leading Democratic lawyers who just are singing his praises on the record. The Washington Post, there was a brief period of time when he didn't get confirmed because he was caught up in some other people's controversies. They were editorializing, confirm this guy, do it now, it's not fair. So I don't see, unless something unexpected happens, that there will be an enormous controversy about this nominee. On the other hand, the place where there is possibly a controversy is over his papers when he served in various administrations. And you can be sure that the Democrats will want to see some of them and that the administration will not want to produce them. They will say they are executive private business and you're not entitled to them.
His papers from when he was Deputy Solicitor General at the Justice Department
under the Bush administration. And in the White House.
Office of Legal Counsel.
And also Reagan. When he was a special assistant to William French Smith, who was Attorney General under President Reagan. And in all of those positions, he undoubtedly has memoranda that he wrote that are, some of which are clearly executive privilege, and others of which can be argued over. And each side will say, well, in such and such a battle, we got that kind of a memorandum. And the other side will say, you've never gotten that kind of a memorandum. But if you were to see a memo, for example, where a nominee says what his personal views are, not just, I would advise you to do this and I would advise you to do mm-hmm. that, but I think this is an outrage, and X, Y, and Z, it would be something.
But barring bombshell here, if you had to handicap this from what you know about Judge Roberts so far, the way he's regarded by lawyers of both parties and what he's done in the past, you're saying no Supreme Court nomination is a slam dunk, but this one looks pretty solid,
don't you? It's pretty dunky, I'd say, at the moment.
I'll promise you I won't quote you on that. I'd like to hear more about this nomination now from our two legal scholars whom we've invited to comment on it. In the studio, Jeffrey Rosen, professor at George Washington University Law School, and also legal affairs editor at the New Republic magazine. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Jeffrey.
And joining us from Malibu, California, is Douglas Kamek, who's professor of constitutional law at Pepperdine University. Hello.
Robert, good to be with you.
I want to get a sense from you about this, first generally about this nomination. A good one that fits the bill, Jeffrey Rosen?
I am one of those many Democrats who will sing John Roberts' praises. I had the pleasure of interviewing him for the New York Times Magazine a couple of years ago and was just impressed with the idea that he was a judge who had a reverence for the courts. He said, if I were inclined to take a position that I'd feel politically satisfying, that I didn't feel I could adequately defend in an opinion, I'd feel embarrassed to put that out in front of the Clinton appointees, who he's known for years. So you have the sense that he's not an ideologue with an agenda, but really someone who's always revered the court his whole life. And you could see him almost weeping as the president was standing there.
Doug Kamek, do we have a complete accord here?
Well, I think very highly of John. I was privileged to work with him in the Reagan administration and in the first Bush administration. He is the type of person who, as Jeffrey suggests, is very careful, that you can see as a judge, that he listens well, he studies words, he studies documents, and he prepares. Somebody doesn't argue 30 cases before the Supreme Court, winning most of them, I think 25, without preparing well. John Roberts is a very careful lawyer who does revere the law and has a great understanding of the Constitution, and in that sense is a very strong nomination.
Let's talk about an issue that is always discussed nowadays in Supreme Court nominations, and that is abortion. As I understand it, when he was questioned by Senator Durbin of Illinois, a Democrat, for his appeals court nomination, he was asked, do you regard Roe v. Wade as settled law, as the law of the land? And my impression, he said yes. Do I have that right, Jeffrey?
He did. But some Democratic interest groups don't like him because when he was a deputy solicitor general, he signed a brief endorsing the Bush administration's position at the time, which is that Roe should be overruled. And he also signed briefs calling for limitations on federal funds regarding abortion counseling and limitations on abortion protests. So there'll be some groups that'll try to make abortion an issue. Now, I hope hope that given his answer to the Senate, people can focus on other, frankly, more controversial parts of his record, which have to do with his whether or not he has a narrow view of federal power. In some ways, that's much more relevant to the issues the court will be confronting than abortion, and perhaps, given his answer, that'll just be taken off the table.
Douglas Kamek, do you think that abortion is going to be off the table based on that answer?
I'm afraid it won't be, because the National Abortion Rights Action League has already a brief document or a briefing backgrounder criticizing John. And here's one of the difficulties of that John will face in the confirmation proceeding, and that is, as Jeffrey suggests, he has been an advocate most of his life. He's been on the Court of Appeals since 2003, so his judicial role is relatively brief. So he has been taking the position of the Reagan and first Bush administration against flag burning and in favor of restrictions on abortion counseling and asking the Supreme Court to overturn Roe, which of course was the policy of President Reagan. And I'm certain he will be asked if those are his views. And this will bring up exactly the difficulty that every Supreme Court nominee faces, and that is what can be said without jeopardizing impartiality for the cases that will be coming up next and that are on the docket, including an abortion case that will be argued next term.
Let me make sure that I understand whether I, as a layman, read the answer to Senator Durbin the same way that you, as a law professor, do. If he says, "I regard it as the law of the land, it's settled law," does that mean he accepts that there is a right to privacy, which extends to a right to a woman's right to choose to have an abortion? Is that what you think when you hear him say, Jeffrey Rosen? Is that what you hear him
say? Not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
If you're being very legalistic about it, you might say that as a lower court nominee who would be sitting on a lower court, he feels that the Supreme Court precedents on abortion are settled, and therefore he's bound to apply them. However,
as a Supreme Court justice,
he might find a different answer.
And do you agree with that, Doug Kamek, that that's what you hear, that same...
I think that's right. I think the answer that an appellate nominee gives is an answer that is different from a Supreme Court justice. And on the other hand, the principle of stare decisis, for the reasons that Jeffrey alluded to at the beginning about John's personality and his reverence for the court and his reverence for the law, the principle of stare decisis would be one that is going to loom large in his judicial philosophy.
Stare decisis meaning it's settled. It's been decided.
That it's settled. That precedent will not be easily set aside to the extent that it has been articulated and relied upon. And that's not just something that binds appellate judges. It's something that is a consideration for every Supreme Court justice as well, and John will take that very seriously.
I want to ask you both your sense of the man's intellect and character and personality. Do you think it's possible that President Bush has nominated somebody who is going to be a leader, someone who becomes a truly influential justice above and beyond his role as associate? Does he have the possibility for greatness in that sense, Jeffrey Rosen?
Well, he's just so dazzlingly smart. It's just so exciting to see someone who's so able, who impresses his colleagues and the justices every time he makes an oral argument, who's able to take either side of a controversial case. He's argued for liberal positions as well as conservative ones as a lawyer. And in addition to that, as Nina suggested, is so nice. The combination of being really smart and very nice is a lethal one when you're talking about influence. Chief Justice Rehnquist, after all, for whom Roberts clerked, had both of those qualities. He had a political savvy, he was extremely smart, and also just got along well with people. And if we know anything from the court, it's that a pleasant temperament can really get you very far.
Douglas Kamek, are you suspect?
We know that very well from the life and powerful history of Bill Brennan, and in fact, John Roberts has the potential of being a conservative Bill Brennan on the court because of that great gift of even temper and personality. He will not be arguing with people through anonymous footnotes and email messages. John is the type of person who will get up from his chair and walk down the hall and visit to talk out an argument and to try and genuinely understand what an opposing view has to say.
You mentioned Justice Brennan, who was a Republican nominee to the Supreme Court.
Exactly.
And went on to be remembered as a great liberal justice, I think much to the dismay of the president who appointed him. Do you think it's possible that a man of 50 who goes to the Supreme Court starts thinking differently, surprising the people whom he's worked with, or is he stare decisis?
many do. But the Bushies are voting that Roberts won't evolve. And from everything I can gather,
or devolve, I think.
No evolving. Remember, Clarence Thomas, right after he got on the court, had a slogan, "I'm not evolving." And there's a sense that Roberts won't either, because by all accounts, and his friends are circumspect about this, but they say that in private conversations, he's extremely conservative. His views about most of the hot-button issues that are convulsing the country are reliably conservative. And in this sense, before this degenerates into a love fest, remember Leahy said, "No one's entitled to a free pass." There's no question that replacing Justice O'Connor with John Roberts might indeed transform the law on many, many issues that people care about, from abortion to, not primarily abortion, but affirmative action, immigration rights. Roberts just decided a crucial case involving the trial of an enemy combatant who is bin Laden's driver. So all of the fear that this nomination might indeed mark a turning point for the court is indeed raised by the appointment of a reliably conservative nominee, and his tremendous ability and scrupulousness and good temperament shouldn't blind us to that fact.
Douglas Kumack, you don't expect any evolution either there? You're fairly confident?
Well, I expect fidelity to the constitutional text, and that's different than a reliable political program or agenda. That's not John Roberts. Roberts is someone who has great respect for the structure of the Constitution. Jeffrey started the conversation by noting that one of the things of interest about him is what he sees as the appropriate balance between federal and state power. In his short time on the U.S. Court of Appeals, he has taken a very careful but a constrained view of federal power, and that certainly will, I think, be what he is faithful to, both of the limitations of his own office as well as the limitations of enumerated power and the federal government generally.
Professor Douglas Kumack of Pepperdine University Law School and Jeffrey Rosen of George Washington University, thanks to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Great. Nina Totenberg.
Yes, I think we should take our eye off of the political ball here a little bit. And what the president has done is pick somebody who is almost universally admired for his intellectual acumen, whether or not people agree with him. But he's also picked somebody that will be, I suspect, greatly satisfying in the long run, and if not the short run, to his conservative base.
He's also picked a white male.
And he's picked a white male. And when he gets his next opportunity to pick a justice, which is likely to be for Chief Justice, sometime in the next couple of years, let's say, there will be a strong likelihood, I suspect, that he will pick a woman or a minority. And my guess would be is that that's when he will pick Alberto Gonzalez, his longtime friend and advisor, and his base will not like it at all, but he will have satisfied them with the first one, and they will be in a less good place to complain.
I won't hold you to that, but thank you. NPR Legal Affairs Correspondent Nina Totenberg and NPR White House Correspondent David Green, thanks for talking with us tonight. To recap, President Bush has nominated Judge John G. Roberts to succeed Sandra Day O'Connor on the Supreme Court. Roberts is 50 years old. He currently serves on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia, and he is a conservative. He began his career as a clerk for Chief Justice William Rehnquist. His nomination now goes to the Senate for confirmation, and tonight President Bush said that he has spoken with the leaders from both parties, Senator Bill Frist and also Senator Harry Reid.
These senators share my goal of a dignified confirmation process that is conducted with fairness and civility. The appointments of the two most recent justices to the Supreme Court prove that this confirmation can be done in a timely manner. So I have full confidence that the Senate will rise to the occasion and act promptly on this nomination. It is important that the newest justice be on the bench when the Supreme Court reconvenes in October.
For his part, Judge Roberts thanked his wife and his family, and he called it an honor and very humbling to be nominated.
Before I became a judge, my law practice consisted largely of arguing cases before the court. That experience left me with a profound appreciation for the role of the court in our constitutional democracy and a deep regard for the court as an institution. I always got a lump in my throat whenever I walked up those marble steps to argue a case before the court, and I don't think it was just from the nerves. I am very grateful for the confidence the President has shown in nominating me, and I look forward to the next step in the process before the United States Senate.
That's Judge John G. Roberts, whom President Bush has nominated for a seat on the Supreme Court of the United States. This has been special coverage from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.